Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. If they try to silence us on YouTube, of course, we have our own platforms. However, last week the purge happened on YouTube. A big purge happened. Say what you will about who they took off. You know, it's just not right. It is not right, especially if you want to comply with Section 230 of the CDA, Communications Decency Act, that differentiates between a content provider and someone who actually creates content. Okay, so creates content versus something that's just a platform. And of course, there's censorship all across the social media platforms as the presidential Trump train gains momentum. I'm going to just give you a list of things that we've been following this weekend, and John Moore's with me, thelibertyman.com. John Moore's with me. We're going to be talking about this and many other things. Now, here we go, all right? Here are some things that we've been following, some more intense than others. This is what you need to know starting off on this Monday, October 19th, 2020. Number one, Pocahontas. That's right. Pocahontas holding this enthusiastic rally for Joe Biden. All of his supporters were so enthusiastic, all eight of them. Did you hear me? Eight. Now, in Erie over the weekend, my hometown, there was a Trump car rally. 500 plus cars, flags, Trump memorabilia, stuff. And it was exciting. 500 cars. Got to be getting to that in a moment. What happened? But, here we have Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, or Joe Biden and Harris. Versus President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. Of course, you have the major networks following Facebook and Twitter, leading their non-coverage of the Hunter Biden scandal. There's a lot to that. That's a big deal. Okay. And you say, what Hunter Biden? I didn't hear about that on the news. Of course not. Going to be talking about that too. Of course, Mark Meadows coming out and claiming the obvious that the social media is biased toward Biden by ignoring the Hunter Biden allegations. And it's just not Hunter Biden allegations. It's allegations that involve Joe Biden access to power under Obama. That's the way they played. That's the way they rolled. Say what you will. That's the way it was. Democratic voter fraud. New data analysis finds some 353 counties. You ready for this? With 1.8 million more registered voters than people who reside there. How does that happen? Think there's fraud? Do you think President Trump is right about fraud? I do believe. Talking about that in a moment. Joe Biden praises authoritarian Democrat Gretchen Whitmer. You know Gretchen, right? I don't like that name for a lot of reasons, and I apologize if you're Gretchen out there. Any Gretchens out there, I apologize. Not a better governor in the U.S., Joe Biden. Calling Gretchen Whitmer best governor in the United States. Well, to be clear, not a better governor in the United States. Meanwhile, the Trump's campaign, and this is important because this relates. Now, I look for patterns. I look for connections. I like to connect dots. John Moore, as a homicide detective, veteran homicide detective, veteran detective, as I am, we like to connect dots. We have little dot connecting games. And there's something going on here, too, because the Trump campaign is saying that that Whitmer and her campaign is encouraging assassination attempts against President Trump. Now, you'll recall that that whole situation was reversed, according to the media, when, in fact, there's not anecdotal, but sufficient circumstantial as well as indirect evidence that, yes, the Whitmer camp is encouraging assassination attempts against the President of the United States. The question as well, another question, this is something that you've got to consider, and I think this is a big question that has not been answered. At least, let me just say it this way, it hasn't been answered the way it should be. The question is this. Why do we have Fauci? Why do we have Redfield? And the members of the press deliberately deceiving the American public about masks, their efficiency, their use. What's going on with the masks? And I ask the readers, the listeners, the people who comment, that is, I'm sorry, on the YouTube channel, I want to hear your thoughts on this. What's the real reason behind this mask deception? Because is it just what it is? Is it just a cigar? Or is it something different? I am telling you, there is something a whole lot more to this, the masks, than anything else. If you go to the Daily Mail, and I'm not going to go through all this, but go to the Daily Mail. I'm not even going to put up a link. You can just find it. You can read all about the Biden sleaze machine, the family sleaze machine. By the way, Jim Jordan, who appeared over the weekend on various television programs, talking about the Hunter Biden emails, don't hold your breath, meaning don't hold your breath while waiting for the FBI to do anything. That means Christopher Wray. So my question is this, and this again is a question up for discussion for all of you folks. Why is under the Trump administration do we have a Department of Justice who is inactive and has been inactive for 4 years? Starting with the Russiagate, why are we playing defense here and not offense? But why have there been no arrests? You'll notice, of course, the, what would you call it? The mantra, lock him up, now a reference to Hunter and or Joe Biden. The rallies. Wait a minute. 4 years ago it was lock her up. So the question is, and you'll have this too, well, Donald Trump, he's part of the establishment. Well, if he's part of the establishment, okay, then boy, he's taken a lot of hits for being part of the establishment. Is it a show? Is it Dog and Pony Show? There's more, and then we're going to get to bring John Moore on to talk about this and anything else. Think about South Africa. Do you know your history, world history? Think about what happened in South Africa. I really want you to think about what happened in South Africa, and I really want you to compare the events of South Africa to America today. I'm reading my notes off my laptop. Can you tell? All right. Now, by the way, this leftist coup could very well backfire. I'm just saying. By the way, DNA, John Ratcliffe, or DNI, the director of national intelligence, John Ratcliffe has cited the Burbank Bolshevik, Adam Schiff himself, the bug-eyed Burbank Bolshevik, a liar, called him a liar, saying that Hunter Biden's laptop is not part of some Russian disinformation campaign. That, according to Adam Bolshevik Schiff. Yeah, okay. Oh, and did you see the hard questions asked of Joe Biden when he and his, I think that was his granddaughter, maybe his concubine, I'm not sure. No, it is his granddaughter. Going off for milkshakes and hard questions. Hey, what flavor did you get? Yeah, okay. By the way, Biden laughed and walked off when questioned about the FBI seizing his son's compromised laptop. In Erie, do we have a picture? All right, let's do the picture first, and we'll play the guessing game. Folks watching at home, watching wherever you're at, let's play a little guessing game. What is that? Eric the Tech, what is that?
It's a broken window.
Of a...
car in the Trump rally.
Okay, so, all right. So I guess we don't have to play the guessing game. You see that window? Reportedly, a pellet or a gunshot to a window. Is that the same car or a different car? Okay, same car. To a couple of windows. There was a Trump rally in Erie, and there were like 500-600 cars. It was a couple of miles long. I mean, it was – you could not believe the number of people for Donald Trump. I'm going to tell you, if Trump loses Pennsylvania, if he loses – you got to question the numbers.
He won't lose because of Erie.
Yeah, it's true. And I don't think he's going to lose in a fair voting system. Anyway, the back story behind this, and this, we had a Patreon meeting last night, it was ad hoc, very brief Patreon meeting. This car was in the Trump rally, reportedly, allegedly struck by a pellet and or a bullet in the window. And
not reportedly.
Well, okay, it was struck. It was.
I'm saying the motive was not reported.
Allegedly. Okay, the motive is alleged.
The news did not cover it.
The news didn't cover it, but. Okay.
It happened, yes.
Yes, it did happen. It was in the Trump rally. A bullet went through the window, didn't strike anyone, but the motive is unclear.
Yes. Yeah. Erie's amateur hour news did not cover it.
Right. Thank you very much. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
The knockoffs, the rejects.
I'm going to tell you something.
Erie news is so bad.
Yes. Now, you've seen my, on my vehicle, I take Donald Trump with me everywhere I go when I drive. When I drive. Now, I usually don't drive. I usually sit in the back seat with Don. That's right. I'm allowed to call him Don. And, we talk. And of course, if something like that happened to me, I guarantee flipping to you, it would have a bad ending. I might not be here the next day. Admittedly so. But it would have a different ending. It would have a bad ending. That's for sure. There's my Donald who travels with me. There's my vehicle. There's the Donald. There's my personal Twitter feed. And, there's my decal. That really looks real. In fact, lady, the studio dog ran out when I had pulled this into the garage. She ran out and she saw that and she barked. Oh my goodness. Like, you know, who was that? And she tried to get in the car. That's how freaked out she was. That was her response. All right. I'm so glad you're with me, folks. And you know what? I want to tell you something. I want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for your trust in us and, for everything you do. And I want to thank our corporate sponsor, Lightstream. You know, if you're like most people, you've got a balance on your credit cards and a higher rate of interest than you would like. Why not turn those balances into one monthly payment at a lower fixed interest rate? and start saving money? Well, Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with autopay and excellent credit. The rate is fixed, so it'll never go up over the life of the loan. The application's 100% online. You don't even have to leave your house to apply. You know, Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. I know members of my family have done this. My niece, who had, was drowning in credit card debt, saved hundreds of dollars a month and lowered her rate incredibly. I mean, I think the highest rate on one of her cars is 21.95 or 21.9 something percent. It was just ridiculous. In comes Lightstream saving the day. Now, folks, my listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. That is LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagman. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. I thank you and you will thank me later. All right. John Moore from thelibertyman.com. I want to say thank you so much for your patience. Thanks for sitting with me through the opening what would you call it? Just a recap of things that are going on. What's on your radar, my friend?
News nuggets.
Yeah, can we, in honor of Herman Cain, are we allowed to use that?
Yes, we are.
All right.
He would give you permission.
All right. Herman Cain, rest in peace. God bless that man. News nuggets. I'm going to start doing news nuggets. What do you think? Let me know.
I listen to him every day as a young man. Every day.
See how old you and I are? Young man. John Moore's even older. Although he's younger in spirit because John's got a TR6 that he drives around. You know, he puts stuff in his bonnet and he's got this windscreen.
Pushes a button, 50 cows pop out.
I'm telling you, man. I wouldn't want to screw with John Moore. You know, I mean, the guy might, he might look, you know, nice and, but I got a feeling he carries a James Bond gun in his tux and I don't know. What do you think? John, do you?
Well, Doug, when I was home on leave, getting ready to go to Vietnam, I was looking at the Walther PPKs, which is what James Bond carried in the movies and the novels, both. Brand new at Venture, which was a nationwide chain, less than $100. Mm-hmm. But my salary at the time from the U.S. Army was $105 a month, so I didn't buy it. But I bought a 45 once I got to Vietnam.
What was that, like 1950? I'm kidding, of course, but no.
Salaries had not gone up much between World War II and Vietnam, quite frankly. Not much at all. In fact, the GI Bill was actually less than it was for World War II vets. So the World War II vets got all their tuition paid, all their books, plus about $100 a month, which was 1946. Now, the Vietnam vets got no tuition, no books, and $105 a month. So we had it quite a bit more difficult than
that
the World War II guys.
Yeah.
Now, I typically worked 2 to 3 jobs in addition to carrying a full semester of college every semester. It was difficult, but it was worth it. So it worked out okay.
Well, you know, you're the man. I got to tell you, that's something, isn't it? $105 is seriously for a new Walther PPK. I have one of those.
That's what it was, 380. It's a, yeah. Contrary to what Hollywood made that little PPK look like, it'd stop a tank, but it's less powerful than a 9mm.
Yeah, I know.
But not much handy, of a pistol, but better than no pistol at all.
I remember, who was it? John Moore that he put up a fuss when they made him carry the ball. He put up a little bit of a fuss when he made him trade off for a Walther PPK. Anyway, it was a fun movie. But yeah, okay. But yeah, James Bond, the modern James Bond, in a sense. I got the feeling, John, you got more going on than people think when you say so. Anyway.
Well, I do. I'm not public about everything. I'm public about a lot of things, but obviously not everything.
He's a smart man. Yeah. I don't like to talk
about
that.
No, I'm sure you're the same way, Doug. Of course you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait until you see what, never mind. All right. So, by the way, folks, thelibertyman.com, that's John Moore's website. He does not, I mean, make sure you bookmark the website. He's got a lot there, and, make sure you check it every day. Of course, his program, his radio program on the website of John Moore, that's thelibertyman.com. There you can drill down and listen to the archives, listen to it in real time, listen to it whenever you want to, but definitely listen to it every, I think Monday, Sam Andrews, right? Oh my goodness.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
He came on and blew the numbers out of the water for, you couldn't believe, I mean, Sam Andrews was, I mean, he really laid it all out. And you have the pleasure of having him every Monday.
Doggone
I do. Doggone it. Man,
well,
you and him are.
Well, Sam and I go back to 1994. So we've known each other a long time. I know all his family members, his mom, his dad, his siblings. So, Sam and I go back a long ways. Absolutely.
Well, I can't think. I'll tell you what, you and Sam together would be a formidable team. And,
well, we have been. It's not a theory. We have, done, some executive protection jobs together.
Yep.
And, well, I've got several men. Whenever an executive protection detail comes up, I have a short list of men. One former French Foreign Legion, another guy who served in both Special Forces and Navy SEALs, of course, Sam, and a couple of others. So whatever the assignment needs, we put together a customized team, and we go take care of it.
You're a killer guy. Never mind. I'm joking around. I shouldn't be. So what's on your radar right now? I mean, here we are a couple of weeks out from election, and what is it, 2 weeks from tomorrow?
It is 2 weeks from tomorrow, and people want to know what they can do. Something on a website, it will only be there another 14 days. We'll take it down the day before the election.
Okay.
It's called Election Day Team. This is a group of people who will train you to become a poll watcher, and you'll be registered with the county government to be a poll watcher and observe and report your findings to make sure everything is happening the way it should happen. So people want to know what they can do. Well, in addition to just voting, you can, bring people to the polls, provide childcare, and maybe pull a shift as a poll watcher that's been trained by the Election Day team to make sure things are happening at the polling place where they should be happening. So it's a definite thing people can do, participate in, and help the election be free and fair. President Trump will be reelected by a landslide, assuming it's a free and fair election. So that's what's going on, Doug.
I cannot for 1 minute think, believe, suspect that he will not get reelected. I'm telling you.
We can't make assumptions. We can't make assumptions.
I get that. How about this? Let's stipulate this. If everyone who said, yeah, I'm voting for Donald Trump does, and everyone who shows up for the rallies goes out and votes for Donald Trump, and it's a free and fair, I mean, it's fair, you know, fair, the election's fair. I can't see how he would lose numerically. I mean, numerically, is that the right use of that word? Anyway, I can't, on the numbers, I can't, I just, you know, I think, answer me this. I was talking with Randy Taylor, who's, by the way, is going to be a first hour guest tomorrow. I was talking with Randy Taylor today, and he said, you know, I'd like to see you put out a tweet. And, he said, ask people how many are willing to die for their country or die for their freedoms in which they enjoy. Ask people, or are you willing? You know, are you willing? And what kind of response would we get? John, let me ask you. Do you think there are people? Well, I know there are, but do you think there are enough people out there willing to die for what we believe in?
Well, I'm not so sure I would use that phraseology. I believe I'd rather use phraseology, something like, are you willing to participate in activities that may result in your death?
Okay.
I'd rather use the George Patton philosophy of make the enemy die for his cause. That's a better way of looking at it, I believe.
I think that's more optimistic, and I think that's more, even more realistic, given the fact that we've got an enemy of, the Muppets, in my view. But, are you willing to put your life on the line to retain what we have?
John? You're asking me personally?
Yeah, I am.
If it comes down to it, I will. I'll do what I can to, and I would look at more like protecting the Republic.
Right. Right. I'm not talking about anything stupid or offensive. Right. And I guess it's sad, isn't it? We have to clarify that, you know. But I am too. I'm to the point now where, you know, I've lived my life. I've regrets. I have a few. I've lived my, you want to sing together?
You don't want to hear me sing, but that's a Frank Sinatra
me neither.
Song.
Me
well,
neither.
Right.
But, I'm willing. I'm ready. If called, I'll answer the call. If I have to, I'll be out there. I don't know.
Well, Doug, in 5 hours, I'm having dinner with my sheriff, which I do once a month. And he's a former Marine, and he's already stated publicly and privately that he will defend the Republic against all enemies, foreign and domestic, defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The oath we take when we enter the military has no expiration date. It's something that's a lifelong commitment. That's my attitude, and it's not going to change.
That's why we love you. And that's why we love sheriffs like your sheriff. And that's why we need sheriffs all across the United States and the 3,300 counties we've got and parishes we have to hold up their oath to the Constitution. You know, and I the way I look at things, let me give you a brief rundown. The Patreons, the people who support us got this information earlier. Here's what I've been hearing. We've been, by the way, Randy Taylor, myself, a couple of other investigators, we have computers set up. We're monitoring chat rooms. And my goodness, it's like playing whack-a-mole, you know, not whack-a-mole to get rid of them, but to follow them, around. We're seeing plans for, the leftists to disrupt commerce, especially within cities, to actually have roadblocks on interstates. And I know that there's ways.
Well, I've already done that, Doug.
Well,
I've already done
that. No, we're talking nationwide. I mean, right. In Podunk, in, you know, Tennessee or whatever. It don't matter. It's we're talking about this plan on and after election. They realize it, to me, what I'm reading in these message forums and the exchanges and such, which some disappear, by the way, right away. Others are up, but I'm seeing where they're saying, hey, Donald Trump's is not going to lose. He's going to win. And in that case, we have to just tear it all down, burn everything down. So disruptions and shooting, shooting police officers, shooting Trump supporters, you know, all of this stuff, grid attacks, kind of like the ELF, Environmental Liberation Front kind of style, if one was to make a comparison. So anyway, this is what I've been seeing. I don't know what you've been seeing, but I've been seeing that.
Well, I'm seeing the same thing. You know, we have a lot of mutual friends and acquaintances, Doug, that'd be Steve Quayle, Mike Adams, Dave Hodges, and so forth. All of us have a consensus that no matter who wins 2 weeks from tomorrow, there's going to be social disorder. It is a communist insurrection, by the way. They've been working for decades to win at the ballot box by changing our culture, changing attitudes, and so forth. It hasn't worked. Here in the heartland, we still are pretty much the way we've always been. Maybe a few people have tattoos or green hair. But other than that, we're still pretty much the way we've always been. And we're the ones that control most of the real estate. And we're the ones with the Electoral College votes. And they know this. They know they're done as far as winning at the ballot box. They also know that former years of President Trump will mean at least one, possibly two more Supreme Court appointees, more than 100 federal judge appointees, getting rid of all the communists and their useful idiots that work in the various executive branch agencies. They'll all be gone in terms of anybody of any consequence. another 4 years of President Trump. They know they're done. They know they're done. So all that's left is violent communist insurrection. And that's what they're planning. That's exactly what they'll do, Doug.
Well, I hope they pack a lunch, bring some friends, because it's not going to be a, it's not going to be easy. To me, it's not going to be easy. I don't think they're going to make it. I mean, I think if they try, if they go out and attempt to take us down in a violent way, I think they're going to be met with a very, very ferocious violence, something that they've never seen before. What do you think of the military? Tell me again. This is something that Sam Adams, Irv Adams, gosh. Yeah, I have another beard, Doug, right? No, of course. Sam Andrews was talking about. We have 445,000 active military members in the United States, of which shooters, as he referenced them, about 20% are comprised. So we'll say 445,000 active military, 20% are shooters, 1.2 million in reserve. Let's see here. 1 in 7 are shooters. You've heard these numbers before. You know these numbers by heart.
Right.
Another 50,000 federal agents. So what are they going to be doing? Are they going to be, playing poker and, what's going to be happening with them?
Well, the president has authority to, bring out the active duty and the reserves, to deal with civil insurrection if he needs to. But that's a good observation. Those percentages, almost nobody in the Air Force is a shooter. The ones that are security personnel, they're very well trained. Very few in the Navy, except the Navy SEALs, have any firearms training of any consequence. Almost all the Marines are shooters because they get their support from the Navy. So they don't need to have all the administrative support people that other branches do. And, of course, within the Army, maybe 10% are what Sam would refer to as shooters. Now, all Army personnel get very cursory firearms training and basic training. They may sit behind a machine gun for 30 to 60 seconds just to say that they did it, and some of the other light infantry weapons. But the majority of people in the Army are support and administrative people, as it is with the Air Force and the Navy. As I sometimes say, Doug, you could put all the combat qualified men in the military in one college football stadium,
yep,
and have seats left over, about 80, between 80 and 100,000. That's everybody. Everybody who would qualify as what might call a shooter or a qualified to actually go into combat and have more chance of surviving than not. It's a pretty small number, to say the least, but that's reality.
Well, we're not. So what Dave Hodges says, what Steve says, what you talk about a type of Red Dawn scenario. I mean, folks, think about this. If you were, I don't know, the president of China, for example, you got a whole bunch of hungry people on your butt yipping at you saying, hey, I mean, how easy would it be for them to come in and take our spoils, take the spoils,
Well, that's the goal.
That's the goal. Right.
Well,
right.
Well, the men are also lonely because of the one-child policy for decades. Many Chinese men know they will never have a wife because
so
they're
lonely.
And if women.
Sorry.
I know.
Forgive my outbursts.
That's okay.
I've had too much Adderall.
We have to have a little humor here now and then anyway.
Yeah.
Well, the Chinese have been very clear in what their goals are and how to achieve those goals. And the defense minister, who's typically the highest ranking military man in the Chinese army, what they call the People's Liberation Army, has given speeches not meant for public release, but we got our hands on it. They've been translated. One of those speeches is on my website for people to read. They do want the United States. They have these convoluted theories. Since Chinese explorers came to North America before Christopher Columbus, that means North America is theirs. They do truly believe that, Doug. Regardless, The plan is to have the United States be invaded and kill off all the Americans and have the United States for themselves to use as they see fit. That is the plan in a very quick, yep, rough and dirty summary.
Yeah, and people tend to not believe that. People tend to say, oh, that's just, you know, a bunch of conspiracy nonsense. But when you look at the documentation, when you look at the goals, even stated by George H.W. Bush back on September 11th, 1990, about a new world order, you know, 11 years before 9/11, when you look at all of the facts out there, John, I'm telling you, it's a little bit disconcerting. If they can't have us internally and take us internally, which I think they're almost there, they certainly can come in and take us externally or both, which is the plan.
Right. So, well, Doug, let's go back to the word theory. A theory is a belief that does not yet have evidence to back it up, such as the theory of Darwinian evolution, that one species given enough time can become a different species. Thus, it will always be a theory because there never has been, never will be, any evidence that one species has become a different species.
Correct.
So what we're talking about here, about the Red Dawn invasion of China and Russia, there is evidence to back up what we say, clear and convincing real evidence. So it's not a theory. It's a belief based on evidence that can be documented and proven. So we're no longer having a theory here. We're having a presentation of fact that can and is backed up by good, solid evidence, Doug.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you're right. And I appreciate how you define the theory and the Darwinian theory. That's rather interesting to me. You know, people often cite science over Donald Trump, especially with respect to the coronavirus. And this is the crap. This is the kind of scientific crap that they point to or put their, you know, put their interest.
Well, everything changes. In 15 days, the day after the election, mm-hmm, assuming there's a clear victor, everything changes with my belief is that everything will change with the Chinese virus, China virus. I like the president's term, China virus.
Communist China virus. Let's remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even more specific.
Right.
We know from what happened 4 years ago when the president was about to become, when he was in that transition to become president after he was elected, that Robert Kennedy was going to be part of the administration. Robert Kennedy, Jr., the son of Bobby Kennedy, has been very vocal for a number of years about the harm and dangers of all vaccines, every one of them. He was going to be part of the Trump administration to expose the harm done by any and all vaccinations. I believe that's representative of President Trump's true belief when it comes to vaccinations. For political reasons, he is giving the appearance, and this is my opinion once again, he's giving the appearance of supporting a China vaccination. China flu vaccination, whatever. My belief is that 15, 16 days from now, the president will publicly discuss his reevaluation of the warp speed, right out of Star Trek, right? Warp speed plan to get a unproven, untested vaccination to the people, because it's not necessary. We need to do what Sweden did, which is no lockdowns. Almost nobody wears masks, and their fatalities per 1,000 people has been less than ours. I think that's a good example to look at, isn't it, Doug?
I think so, too. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and folks, you can look it up yourself, what Sweden has done. The herd mentality thing. By the way, herd mentality, in a sense, is, I guess that's what you'd be talking about, right? Herd mentality?
Well, it's not mentality, it's herd immunity.
Herd
immunity.
Immunity.
Now, we had a doctor recently last week saying that you can't obtain herd immunity by having everybody get together. Well, that's the only way you can get it.
Yes.
Is by having, there is no other way. And I don't know where that doctor came from or what his credentials were, but that's absurd. Herd immunity comes from everybody being together, socializing together. And that is how, there's no other way. If people isolated, you can't possibly obtain herd immunity.
Okay, well,
can't be done.
With what you said, so herd immunity, and my bad for herd mentality, but maybe, all right, anyway, here's what was said. And you have to ask yourself why the breasts and is suddenly so, you know, Karen-like over, and I apologize to anyone named Karen, over herd immunity. Okay, go back to October 12th, World Health Director, Director General Tedros, whatever his name is, can I buy a consonant or vowel, please, said that pursuing herd immunity is unethical. Listen to this. And within hours, most of the media broadcasting were broadcasting the same message.
Right.
Okay. So Sweden's experiment with herd immunity is unethical, undemocratic. Australia's.
Well, the one thing he didn't say is it didn't work, did he?
No, he didn't. No. It's missing in my notes here. It's missing in this article. The Federalist has an article that was published yesterday by by Jay.
Well, it's a 2,000-year-old matter that if you can't attack the message, you attack the messenger.
Of course.
And that's what's going on here. He couldn't attack the fact that herd immunity was achieved by Sweden, so he attacked the messenger. They're unethical. They're wrong. They're bad. He didn't attack the message itself, did he?
No, no. As a matter of fact, in the Federalist article, let's see here. Well, you know, herd immunity isn't so much a strategy as a fact of life when dealing with infectious agents like the coronavirus. Okay, which is true. There's nothing here. There's nothing here that said this doesn't work, that this was a bad idea.
Huh. I was at a restaurant, Doug, last week, and all the employees were mandated by the employer, the only restaurant, to wear a mask. And so I said to the waitress, I said, you only bought one of those. You didn't buy a box of 25, did you? And she says, no, of course not. I bought one. I said, if you bought a box of 25, the manufacturer statement on the side of the box says it won't protect you against any kind of illness or flu.
Right. I got one of those boxes here somewhere.
Yeah, right.
In Chinese, no less, in addition to English, but all right.
Well, I sometimes wonder, are there adults in charge?
Yeah.
It's become so widespread and so well known that the manufacturer of the mask says it won't protect you from influenza. Who doesn't know this, Doug? Are they living under a rock?
I think it's a lot easier for people. John, tell me if this is true. I mean, I think it's a lot easier for people to convince themselves, to accept a lie than it is for them, obviously. And I can't remember who said this, that they've been lied to. All right. So you got people. So you got a couple of different kinds of people. You got people who walk around, I'll just do it because I don't want to cause trouble. All I want to do is I want to go in, get my loaf of bread, my thing of milk and leave.
Right.
And then you got people go in and say, I ain't wearing a mask. That's me. I mean, screw you. I'm not wearing a mask.
Right.
Catch me if you can. And then, of course.
Well, it depends on the situation. You know, if it's a government agency you have to deal with, and they probably won't deal with you. Like the Postal Service, for example. If you have to deal with a clerk in most post offices, they won't talk to you unless you wear a mask. So what a quandary. You have to deal with the post office to get an important package mailed, but they won't talk to you unless you wear a mask. That's where the mosquito net masks come in that my friend Tim Spencer, he's now got about 8 different versions of different sizes, including one that the women can wear to a Christmas party. It's got sparkles all over it. he's gotten real fun and real creative with this. It is a lot of fun, Doug. In fact, I'm going to ask my friend Tim Spencer to mail you a couple of masks so you can see them.
All right. Well,
very high quality.
You got taken to the woodshed for caving in. And I'll just be honest with you because John Moore's caving in, you know, he's – you shouldn't wear a mask, but John's caving in, you know, by making these novelty masks. But you're really not. And that's what people have to understand. These are not made to work, folks. They're made to make a statement.
Well, here's what I do, Doug. Typically, I carry it in the vest of my leather vest in the pocket. And I'll pick it up and I'll hold it in front of me. I don't put it on. And I'll ask the person, do you feel safe now? Because it's clearly nothing that's going to stop anything. So I have fun with it. I have a lot of fun with it. And people, without exception, everybody has laughed, a deep belly laugh when they take a look at it. So it's a lot of fun. It's a novelty. If you are required to wear one because you got no choice because of your employer, then you can be in compliance and not build up the carbon dioxide in your blood. Now, I'm not aware if any long-term studies have been done from people wearing a mask 8 hours a day and the oxygen deprivation that's taking place. It can't be good. Cutting down the amount of oxygen in your bloodstream cannot possibly be good. How harmful? That's the only question. It's not a question if it's harmful. The question is, how harmful? To be wearing a mask it reduces the oxygen in your blood. Of course it's harmful. How bad? I don't know. But that's where we are. We're encouraging almost everybody in this country to do something that is, in fact, harmful and, in fact, does not help their health at all when it comes to not getting a virus.
Let me ask you this, because at the opening I kind of said we talk about this. Is a mask, is that the way to, how can I put this to you? Is this just to assess compliance?
Well, there probably is somebody doing that. It's been about 4 months ago, the owner of a company that I visit frequently, retail establishment, they probably got 80 to 100 people a day coming in the door. And 4 months ago, he says, John, I learned how to tell who the liberals are. They wear masks.
Exactly.
And I've made the same observation and among people I know that the liberals – almost always wear a mask, even though they're not in a high risk. They're below age 70. They don't have any obvious comorbidities. But it's very common among liberals to wear a mask for whatever reason.
But I'm here to tell you, John, that look, I don't believe masks work, obviously. And the box, you know, that this obviously they don't work. But so not only do I question the masks as a method of compliance or assessing compliance. John, there's something wrong with this specific virus. For example, why this virus? We know why now. You know, looking at it from an investigative point of view, why this specific virus? Is there something, to me, there's something wrong with this. Will it mutate? Obviously, it does mutate.
Well, all viruses mutate.
Right.
But my Thursday guest, Dr. Lynn Horowitz, has done extensive research, and he's qualified to do this research with his training. The research he's done shows that it is a man-made virus.
Right.
That has, among other things, it has a part of Ebola is mixed in with it. It's incredibly contagious. Not very fatal. The level of fatality is about the same, maybe even slightly less than a regular seasonal flu. Where we know now we're approaching the 1 year mark of this virus being in this country.
Yes.
We know that the New York nurses were saying almost everybody that died was obese. The doctors and scientists in Germany appointed by the government to look into it, they said that everybody who died without exception was within 1 year of death from something because their health was so fragile. And it's pretty common among healthcare professionals to observe and understand that any individual is down to their last year of life because their health has become so fragile. So this is becoming pretty common knowledge. We're also learning, it's not common knowledge, from my Thursday guest, Steve Hunt, the John Moore Radio Show Economic Advisor. He has type A blood, and he was in the hospital for 2 weeks with COVID. And he had always wore a mask outside, did all the things he was supposed to. So we had three doctors a day that, you know, they work 8 hour shifts. Each one came in one by one and said, Steve, our observation here at this hospital in Phoenix is that everybody who got really, really sick and or died all had type A blood. So that's another observation that's not been, talked about publicly at all that I know of. We're not sure what it means. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to know, is that common for this racial group or that racial group? I quite frankly don't know. except these doctors have all come to that conclusion. So we're living in a twilight zone of advice being given that has no basis in science, no basis in reality. A 14-year-old girl, freshman in high school, giving advice to the entire country about social distancing. It's bizarre. It's strange. It's not necessary. In my neighborhood, almost nobody wears a mask except people that are do have fragile health and liberals. Otherwise, nobody at the restaurant, including the workers, wear a mask. It's just not done in my neighborhood and most of my county, by the way. I live in Crawford County, Missouri. So the inmates are in charge of the asylum.
Right.
And who would have guessed a year ago, Doug, that such a bizarre thing would be taking place? Now, I did write in my paper, it's a free download at my website, no need for panic, that one of the ways for people to voluntarily stay at home would be to have a biological attack. We're getting some reports about gamma rays hitting us from another solar system that could knock out the power grid, especially in the southern hemisphere. Hal Turner has been reporting that the last few days.
Right.
That may have legs. It may be verifiable. From what I'm seeing, it could very well be verifiable. Any kind of major, and I say major, any kind of major event such as that, the government's going to want people to stay at home so that there will be order instead of chaos for as long as possible. And that would be natural and normal for any government to want to do that, to maintain order. If that means keeping people at home with a make-believe flu response, and once again emphasizing, yeah, there really is a Chinese COVID-19 flu, but on one hand. On the other, the response is what's strange. The response is what's bizarre. The response is what's been unnecessary and not real.
I'm glad you said that. It's the response. Although I do believe you're right. There's something about this specific virus in air quotes, but the response is really maybe what we should be taking a look at, and going backwards to really figure.
Well, the virus is already mutating. The scientists in Europe have already found over 100 mutations of this virus. Even if they could come up with a valid vaccine, which I don't, they may claim it's valid. I'm not going to take it. The mutation of the virus pretty much, in my non-scientific brain, mitigates the creation of a vaccine for a specific virus. Once it's changed, and it will either obviate the virus vaccine being good at all or reduce the effectiveness of it, assuming it would be effective at all.
It gets me. It makes me laugh when you say that. Though it makes me laugh when people say, "Oh, if Donald Trump, if it comes out under Donald Trump, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to wait until Trump's out of office before I take the vaccine, so I can be sure that it works or it's good." I just it hurts my head to think about this.
Well, Donald Trump doesn't have the White House kitchen mixing this stuff up.
He could. He could be back there going,
Double toil and trouble.
Shaken or stirred, what would you prefer?
Well, it's the major pharmaceutical companies, obviously, that are coming up with the silliness, not Donald Trump. And I think Donald Trump can segue real quick from publicly supporting one thing to publicly supporting something else, direct opposite. He's doing what he needs to do. A good example would be Mike Pence. And the way he successfully danced around the question about human activity causing climate change, which of course it doesn't and it can't. He's successfully avoided directly answering that question because he cannot lose votes. They can't afford to lose votes by stating something is true, which it is true. Human activity can't change the climate.
Well, that's a sad thing. I mean, I get what you're saying, but that to me, that's sad.
It is sad, but it's reality.
You're true. That's true. It's reality, but it's still sad reality, where I can't tell the truth because that would cost me votes. Well, no, I mean, friggin' human activity, a can of hairspray is not going to put a hole in the ozone layer. It's not going to increase the temperatures of the earth. It's not going to melt the icebergs. We give ourselves too much credit as human beings, that we can affect the planet in that fashion. You're
right. Well, we're getting the Paris Climate Accord published at my website. If it's not there, it'll be there in the next day or two.
Okay.
27 pages. Now, people can argue about the science, about hairspray, cow flatulence, emissions from motor vehicles. That can go back and forth ad nauseum. The truth of the matter lies in the 27 pages of the Paris Climate Accord. So I've led several people down this primrose path, including my kid brother, and I'll say the following. Well, can we agree that human activities causing climate change? And my kid brother says, yes, of course. Can we agree that this human activity causing climate change is a clear and present danger to every human being on the planet? Of course, that's true. That's true, John. Can we agree that the Paris Climate Accord would help mitigate that to save everything on the planet? Well, of course, John. And we can also agree that Donald Trump's withdrawing from that was a disaster. Of course, John, that's true. Then I hold up a copy of the Paris Climate Accord. And I say, here it is. It gives everybody in China, everybody in India, which is 37% of the people on the planet, by the way, a free pass to make all the carbon dioxide that they want to. And, of course, my kid brother, shocked. He doesn't want to believe it. But it's right there, ink on paper, in their own words. The Paris Climate Accord gives 37% of the people on this planet a free pass to make all the carbon dioxide that they want to. Well, Doug, both beliefs can't occupy the same space. They can't. It's like putting two positive ends of two magnets together. They bounce off each other. You know, a negative and a positive magnet ends will attract each other. But the two positive ends, you can't put them together without extreme force. And that's the same thing with the Paris Climate Accord. It's a fantasy. And the proof is right there, ink on paper. Make all the CO2 greenhouse gases you want if you're in India and if you're in China. But bad, bad, bad Western civilization, United States, Canada, Europe, you're bad people, so you can't do that. But that's reality, Doug. Making the arguments that you made are true and accurate. Hairspray, car emissions, cow flatulence can't do this. And people may argue with you about that. They may, oh, yes, it can. You can't argue with the document itself. That can't be argued with. It's right there for anybody to read. And as I said, Doug, a moment ago, I hope to have it on my website soon, if it's not there already. Sometimes my webmaster and I don't always know, at least I don't always know what he's got posted, I should say. But I've given him instructions to post on my website, and he's diligent, and he'll get it done.
Folks, that's thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com, not net.com. Com, say it with me, thelibertyman.com.
Don't use a search engine. Put it right in your browser.
Right, or just go to HagmanReport.com and open up the link to the program today. And
there we go.
You know, click on it, and there it is. And if it doesn't look like that, then you're in the wrong place. But yes, you're absolutely correct. And we were talking about the two magnets, same poles having this visceral, intense pushback from one another.
Right.
It just made me think of the homosexual agenda and homosexuality. But what was I thinking?
You mean a mental illness of homosexuality?
Right, that's right. That's right. So,
well, it is.
Two magnets.
It's until same. For political reasons. They changed the diagnostic manual that all psychological professionals use for decades.
That's
homosexuality is listed as it should be as a mental illness. Of course it is a mental illness. Now, for political reasons, they basically cut that page out. Cut.
Of course.
No more homosexual mental illness. It's just, it didn't make it go away. It didn't change it. All it did was eliminate it from the diagnostic manual, did it?
That's like me, you know, sitting here and saying, you can't see me. You can't see me.
Right. Well, that's ridiculous. Good for a one-year-old.
Yeah. looking at some of the goofballs out there, Antifa and BLM and Black Bloc goofballs out there, I don't know. Purple hair, piercings in every part of their body, tattoos. I think they're tattoos. I don't know. Unless they're, unless somebody.
Well, Doug, this brings up something that my Wednesday guest, Professor McCanning, what a brain this man has. He taught astrophysics and mathematics in two different departments at Cornell University. And I got the biggest belly laugh out of this guy. And Doug, you know, when we were children, we would get copies of National Geographic, and we'd find out as children, as 8, 9, 10-year-old children, how to quickly identify Stone Age people with no written language and no knowledge of mathematics, because they had pieces of metal sticking out of their face and tattoos all over. So we learned as children how to identify barbaric, primitive people with no knowledge of mathematics and no written language, because they had pieces of metal sticking out of their face and tattoos all over. And I can still do that. When I see somebody with pieces of metal sticking out of their face and tattoos all over, I know that they also are a primitive person with very limited cognitive ability.
Kind of like, kind of like emojis. Now, how do you feel about emojis?
Well, I've actually, in some cases, I've made use of them in texting, because they can be fun. I'm being drugged into the digital age by force, basically. I'm real good at using a typewriter and carbon paper,
yeah.
Using a fax machine,
yeah.
Using a reel-to-reel tape recorder.
There you go.
Tuning up a half-century-old British sports car with no electronics, no computer, all leather and walnut and steel.
In other words, the way it should be all around.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. Writing in cursive, too. You do that.
Well, that's a basic foundation of Western civilization, and being an American is being able to walk up to the original Declaration of Independence in the National Archives, right down the street from the White House, by the way, being able to walk up to the Declaration of Independence and being able to read it.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're not taught to write in cursive, guess what? You can't read it either. They may as well be looking at, these youngsters looking at Egyptian hieroglyphics for
there
all it means
to. There you go. And that's why, and John, that's why I brought up emojis, because the way I look at this society in general, and I'm going to get off my soapbox and again turn it over to you, but you know, I look at some of these people, they've got more metal in their face, on their nose, in their ears, and on their lips, and their tongue, and eyebrows. It's like, first of all, what in the hell is wrong with you? What, do you have daddy issues, mommy issues? Didn't get enough attention at home. And so purple hair, green hair, blue, mixed color hair, you starving for attention? Is that what you want, attention? I'll give you attention. And then they can only type, you know, when I did a couple of cases and I looked at the back end messages of Facebook and stuff. All right. I learned a whole new language. I did.
Really?
Yeah. You know,
really?
For example, Eric the Tech, you're quick on this. You give me like WYD. Okay. Question mark. What you doing?
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, are you too stupid or lazy to type that out? First of all, why don't you just call the person? Or,
began, Doug, before smartphones. When, especially youngsters, children in high school that had the older flip phones, they learned how to text, using a 10-digit, number system without even looking at the screen. And it's carried over now to smartphones, which of course have a little keyboard deal on it.
Right.
So I believe that's where that all got started.
Okay. But see, I look, you know, the way I look at it is some parents might say, well, or people, yeah, this is harmless, and even engage in this activity themselves. And oh, throw a smiley emoji. What can it hurt? You know, I get that. But if somebody sends me, first of all, I don't talk emojis. Don't send me one. Okay, I don't need to see them. I don't use hieroglyphics. I use words. Don't send me like this line of, I don't know what the hell it is, but it's something I'm supposed to be able to recognize. Just don't do it.
Well, it was other nuances. People under the age 30 using the word like in every other sentence.
Yeah.
Making the hand gestures of the air quotes. A friend of mine, he's in his mid-60s, a very bright attorney, is a very successful trial lawyer. He spends way too much time with women. And he'll, until I corrected him, he was using air quotes himself. And I don't want to use his name, but I'll say, Billy Bob, just so I had to make up a name, Billy Bob. You know that real men don't use air quotes. You do know that, right? And can you imagine seeing John Wayne using air quotes?
No.
No, I don't think so.
No.
It's mostly a female gesture, quite frankly. And if a woman wants to do it, I respect that. It's a great feminine trait to make air quotes. But for a real man to make air quotes is just that's just not right.
I can see the comments now on YouTube and
well, stuff. So what?
Here's the thing. You guys are talking about emojis and air quotes and stuff and the world's falling down around us. And well, why in the hell do you think it's falling down around us? Okay. Because people don't know cursive. People are not being taught cursive. It's being taken out of our schools. You can't communicate properly. You got to say like every two sentences. Like I really, you know, like some valley girl. Okay. You have to have that upward inflection.
Valley speak. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So shut up. How's that? You understand that? Okay.
There's been a couple of times I'll be in a conversation with a young person and I'll almost always have a piece of paper and a pen handy. It's just who we are, Doug. So I'll notice about the second or third sentence they're using the word like over and over again. I'll just make little hash marks. Ching, ching, ching as they use the word like. And then after maybe 5 minutes of that, I'll say, do you know, Billy Bob, how many times you used the word like in the last 5 minutes? And I'll hold the piece of paper and I say 20 times. Mm-hmm. And I'll say something like, you're a young person. You got your whole life ahead of you. You're interacting with people in supervisory positions, older adults. If you want to successfully communicate with them, you need to drop the use of that word like every other sentence. You really do.
Yeah.
If you want to be respected as a mature, educated adult with good verbal skills, you need to drop the word like being used every other sentence. And, I'm respectful for these youngsters. They don't know they're doing it. It's such a foundational part of who they are and their language and their verbal skills. They're not even aware they're doing it. It's a sad commentary, but that's where we are, Doug.
Yeah, indeed. Sad commentary, indeed. Just to change the subject a little bit, apparently Biden is going to be hiding out in his Delaware home in the basement until after the debate. Wait, hang on a second. You ready for this? Debate.
All right. Well done, Doug.
Thank you. On Thursday, he must have saw a shadow when he came out. I'm not sure if he saw a shadow or not, but,
Well, hopefully it'll be the shadow of a U.S. Marshal serving him, papers, or maybe just arresting him.
To that I say, fantastic. Wait, I have to do it this way. There we go.
OMG.
OMG.
Like
LOL. never mind.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So yeah, whatever you want. I mean, Mondays are Mondays. I'd assume
FU is one of them.
Oh, it is.
You aren't going to say it, but
it is. But
if it's just letters,
well, yeah. I don't know. I think they probably have a emoticon for that too, don't they? I know they have a middle finger. I've gotten that in my
Well, the military has lots of acronyms and has had for many decades. In fact, the military publishes a book. Each branch of the military has their own book with the sometimes hundreds of acronyms. It's an interesting side note. When we invaded Grenada back in the 80s to get rid of the communists running that little island nation. The Vietnam War had been over about 10 years or so. And they found out that the Army couldn't talk to the Air Force couldn't talk to the Navy, to the Army, and none of the four services could talk to each other, quite frankly. And we did lose some people because of that, because of the change in cultures and language. Immediately following the Grenada invasion, the services started training officers back and forth for a three-year tour of duty to understand how the other service worked and understand language and acronyms so that we could avoid the debacle that we had at Grenada. And that effort, of course, have paid off during Desert Storm and Desert Shield and these wars, these continuous unnecessary wars we've had now for, this is the 20th year, by the way, of these unnecessary, endless, illegal wars. But the payoff did show up in making those efforts so the various services could talk to each other and actually understand each other.
You know, it's pretty sad when that happens. I suspect like you, you remember when patrol cars, they didn't have, first of all, when we didn't have two-way radios. Back in the day, right?
Well, I don't have, even when I was in high school, the patrol cars had two-way radio, so I don't have any clear recollection, recollection of that being the case.
All right, let me rephrase that. When I say two-way radios, I'm talking about the radios that come out of the car.
Oh, the handy talkies.
No. Yeah, those things. What are those called? Yeah.
Handy talkies.
Okay. No. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You had to go.
I remember those days, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, you obviously had to go to the back to the car in order to.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
What about it, Doug?
What was I talking about? I don't know. Eric, do you help me out here? I'm having a Biden moment.
OMG.
OMG. LOL. Okay. I don't know. What the hell was I even talking about that for?
Come on, man.
Well, something to do with communication. We're talking about the military and their lack.
Oh, yeah.
The lack of. Yeah. About to teach them.
Well, and that's the thing. We've come a long way with communications. And at the same time, I think we've also, decimated our interpersonal communications as well.
Well, it has been. And young men are, for a number of reasons, are deathly afraid to even date a young woman. And this is high school and college both. Frequently they'll have what's called a group outing where there'll be three or four men, three or four women. Nobody is dating a specific person, but they have an evening together playing pool or watching a movie or going to a concert with nobody specifically dating another person. These young men are scared to death of women in general. Yep. And scared to death of a relationship with a woman in general. For a lot of reasons. The culture has changed, all through grade school and middle school and high school. Being a manly man is discouraged and frowned upon and made fun of, which is a natural thing for a young man with a natural level of testosterone and the things that young men have and should have. They must find it incredibly difficult to be a young man, and when all the natural things that a young man can and should be doing are made fun of and disparaged, and that's largely where we are, Doug, in that regard.
I can't argue with you there. Well, that's very true. By the way, getting back to coronavirus, and if I don't mention this, people are going to ask me why I didn't mention this during Donald Trump's Monday morning campaign briefing. As well. He went on the attack against Fauci. He said, and I quote, the New York Times came out with this on the New York Times Twitter account, President Trump attacked Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease specialist. Of course, they got to throw that in there, as a disaster, and said that people were tired of the coronavirus and want to be left alone during a call with campaign staff.
Where's the chain of command there?
Oh, the horror.
Who has the authority to fire Dr. Fauci? I don't know that. Do you know?
I don't know. I know I don't.
Is he the head of an executive branch agency? which typically the president can fire anybody, the attorney general, you know, the head of the FBI and so forth. If it's in fact a branch of the executive office, an executive branch agency, he would have the authority to fire Dr. Fauci if he chose to. I don't know the answer to that. Apparently you don't either, Doug.
No, I don't. I'm going to have to go to Facebook or Twitter for my news, to get that. No, seriously, I don't know. Honestly, but I don't think Fauci is actually is he part of the
National Institute of Health? Now, yeah. Where does their money come from? You know, are they funded by Congress? I think they are. I believe they are. Do they receive private funding? I don't know. Who appoints the head of it? I don't know that either. But the president has made disparaging reports about Fauci for 2 or 3 months at least, and he should. And a lot of people wonder, myself included, why is Fauci not fired if the president has the authority to do so? Why hasn't that happened? Maybe the president's waiting until the day after the election to fire Fauci. I don't know. But it needs to happen.
Yeah, it does. Indeed it does. By the way, speaking of Donald Trump, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear 2 cases involving Trump administration policies at the U.S.-Mexico border. Again, oh, the horror. One about a policy that makes asylum seekers wait in Mexico for U.S. court hearings. Oh, my goodness. Oh. And then another one about the administration's use of money to fund the wall, to fund the border wall. Oh, gee whiz. I don't know. I want to put up a fence, John, in my house, in my yard. I don't know. I guess I got to go through my wife and then ask, you know, my son-in-law, and then we have to take a vote, and then we have to, Go ahead. I'm just rambling.
Well, I'm pretty sure the Trump administration is going to be okay on both counts. I don't know the details of the 2 cases before the Supreme Court, but, I don't see anything unethical or illegal about having these people remain in Mexico while a decision is being made. It's an executive branch function, part of why they exist at all, to protect the integrity of the United States of America from foreigners, foreign invaders, aliens coming across our country without proper documentation. I don't see there's going to be any issues with either one of those, Doug.
No, neither. And you know, how do you feel about Amy Coney Barrett? How do you feel about her?
I think she's a great woman, a great scholar. If she doesn't have genius level IQ, she has to be very near genius level IQ. She has a great sense of humor. I think she'll make a great Supreme Court justice, and she'll be there for decades into the future.
John, when she was asked by that senator, hold up your notes, and she held up
her
notes.
That was brilliant. Right.
And
it was brilliant.
It was blank.
Right.
Now, if you'd asked me during my program to hold up my notes, and I did that, believe me, you'd know that there was nothing on here. I'd be going, ding, ding, ding. It's just, I mean, yeah, that was a brilliant move, by the way. But
it was.
Yeah.
It was. I'm sure it wasn't planned in advance, but it was a brilliant move from that Senate, by that Senate. Which senator was it? Do you recall?
I don't remember.
I don't recall, but it was a male senator, and it was brilliant on his part. And she had just the biggest smile on her face because she knew exactly what he was doing.
You know, it makes me feel old. You and I could have babysat her. You know that, right?
I mean, well, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, talking about a bummer, I'm thinking, you know, here I am, and I'm thinking, my God. And my wife said, you know, you could have been there. You could have actually, we could have babysat her.
Well, I'm reading obituaries in my neighborhood, and I'm seeing grandparents die that could be my children, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a wake-up call. I started reading the obits when I was in Vietnam because my buddies' names were appearing there, and it's not normal for a 20-year-old to be reading the obituaries, but I did because I knew I'd see people I knew.
Wow.
After the war is over, I no longer did that for quite a while. But, it's just part of it. It's just part of the maturity process that we grow older, and we see young people coming up and taking their proper position in society. And that's a great thing. That's the way it should be, Doug.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely correct, except for us getting older, except for that part, I think, if we could kind of remain the same and then everyone else can. Anyway, yeah. So, all right, John, I love Mondays because I can sit back here, cross my leg like I just did, and just talk because, you know, there's so much to talk about, but I want to turn it back to you. And by the way, folks, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Let me don't appear so casual. Thelibertyman.com, John Moore. There's this website right there. I would urge everyone to go there. Please do it. And then click on the link to his radio show. You can drill down for the archives. But check out his entire website. Check out what he has for his wares for sale. Check out what supports John Moore. Take advantage of what supports John Moore. And may I say, support John Moore. So go to thelibertyman.com and do that. And he's a good guy. He's got a wonderful radio program, 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, for those in Hattiesburg and San Francisco. That's every weekday.
Well, Doug, about 2 months ago, I approached the station management, Mr. Stepmiller, about taking on a third hour. He says, John, nobody on the network has 3 hours on this network, including myself. He does 5 to 7 central time, Monday through Friday. And I felt I needed the extra hour to get more information out to people, especially in these times. And I knew it would change my life. I didn't know how many ways it would, but it's changed my life in many ways to have that third hour, Monday through Friday. So more people are demanding of my time by telephone and by email. And that's okay. I expected that. It's as you know, any talk show host knows, it's, physically draining, but emotionally uplifting to do talk radio, and our TV as far as that goes. But that's okay. It's part of it. As, one of my mentors said, John, this is our chosen profession. We signed up for it, so we can't complain. And I don't complain. It's work. That's why we call it work, because it's work. I've been a radio talk show host since, 1995, Doug, and, it's been good for me in a lot of ways. I initially was making speeches to 40, 50 people at a time, maybe 60 or 70. And I wanted to have a greater outreach, primarily back then in the mid 1990s about Second Amendment issues. But it moved on from there to the point where it's become a full-time career. I'm no longer soliciting work, investigative work. I've had enough murder cases to last me a lifetime, quite frankly. As I said previously on this show, that if one of my clients called me and said, John, I got a murder case, I need your help, I would agree to help, but only in an advisory capacity, while I directed the efforts of a younger investigator to go out and beat on doors, pound the streets, getting to the records, getting the documents, and so forth. I don't need that anymore. I've done that. I've been there, got the T-shirt, as they say. But it's been a real journey being involved in the media and meeting people like yourself, Doug, Steve Quayle, Doug Hagman, Mike Adams, and my friend Ted Brewer. I was a house guest at Ted Brewer's home this past February, and he's got a wonderful home, a beautiful wife, and a great lifestyle. And it wasn't for me being a talk show host, I would never have met Ted Brewer. You and I were supposed to meet a couple of times, but things changed. And if things back to normal, Doug, and we get back to having conferences again in person, I'm sure we will meet and get a chance to get together, get to know each other one-on-one in person, as opposed to just over the TV once a week.
I agree, and we'll meet, that's for sure. I believe that 100%. I'm not sure the conditions under which we'll meet, but I know we'll meet. Do you think we're making a difference? You and I.
Oh, I know we are.
Okay.
We are. I get the phone calls. I get the emails. People's lives literally changing for the better. One of the products I sell, the energy cleaner, I get emails at least once a week. People getting their life back because they're relieved of arthritis pain. They get a better night's sleep. And it's very gratifying. I've had a number of people move to the Arkansas, Missouri Ozarks purely because I got them interested in doing it through my radio show, and they're happy they made that move, leaving where they might have been. And it's been multiple incidents of people literally having their lives changed. Are their lives improved because of the John Moore radio show? It's very gratifying, and the attaboys help. The attaboys help me stay dedicated and stay focused on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I'm sure you get the same feedback, Doug, that people have made major changes in their life because of your radio show, the information you put out that helped their health, helped the environment they live in, maybe helped them have – I remember suggesting – oh, this has been my original St. Louis show – suggesting people get a skill such as becoming a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician, a mechanic. And one of my friends, he did that. He became a journeyman, a carpenter. It changed his life much for the better, solely based on listening to a radio show.
I think I ask that question. Sometimes I think I need reassurance. My wife sometimes says, you need me to pat you on the head there. And sometimes you almost feel that way, or at least I do. And I shouldn't feel that way at all, because we do what we can do, only what we can do, as much of what we can do. And we try to change the hearts and the minds of people. Now, I just think, though, John, I think we're coming to that point, that crunch point, when, the microphones are going to have to be put down, and we're going to have to, we're going to have to change course a little bit. That's what I was thinking.
Well, I know what you're alluding to.
I know.
And I don't want to see that happen. No, I don't want to see violence in the streets of America. For most Americans, war is 90 minutes in an air-conditioned room with popcorn.
Right.
That's war for most Americans. That's not my reality. I know what war is, and I don't really participate in another war. I really don't. If I'm given a choice, of course I'll defend lives and property. But I'd much rather see things change through peaceful ways. I'm not sure we're going to be given that option, Doug. I really don't. The communists will become violent, and they will become violent everywhere at the same time, which is why we see Dave Hodges making frequent references to the Tet Offensive, which was the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong attack at the end of January 1968. I was there. I was in it. And those first 2-3 days, those first 72 hours, we didn't know who was going to win. We really didn't. That's how bad it was. The first day, by mid-morning, by 10 a.m., that first morning of the Tet Offensive, the Viet Cong were inside the embassy compound in Saigon, theoretically the most secure place in the whole country. And so the analogy that Dave Hodges uses is excellent and well-chosen, because right now we're having almost no activity from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. I believe
yes.
right now that
why?
Right, well, they're retraining, they're getting re-equipped, resupplied, and getting ready to strike at the heart of America, either the day of or the day after the election. That's my belief based on what I know, Doug.
And that's what I've been seeing a lot of. Just so people know, again from my Patreon meeting last night. As we watch these different groups, and they're geographically diverse, okay, so you might have groups talking in the Pacific Northwest, groups talking in Middle America and the East Coast, and then you've got another level talking higher and talking between themselves. But I'm telling you right now, you got to watch Election Day, the day after, and the time after Election Day. Even the day before, but not that much. I've been seeing a lot of the day of and this resignation. President Trump is going to win, so we have to take America back by force. That's the theme I've been seeing.
How can you take something back you've never had?
It's a great question. What the hell are they talking about? In other words, I mean, right. I know what they're talking about, but what right. do they think they're talking about? Yeah, you're right.
I think they think the country is rightfully theirs.
Yes.
That's what they believe. They believe in their hearts that this country can and should be a communist state.
Of course.
Using the word socialism and communism are basically synonyms, by the way. So, that's what they believe. Now at the higher levels, they know it's all flim-flam. At the George Soros, Alexander, his son, they know it's just a matter of power for themselves. They could care less about the people. They could care less about communism. That's just a vehicle to achieve their goal of worldwide domination and eventually eliminating America, eliminating the values that we share, eliminating a country that's provided more opportunity for more people on this planet than any country has that we're aware of ever. They want to destroy that. They want to eliminate the U.S. Constitution. They want to eliminate the basic American culture of, the things we believe in and do. So that's what's coming. And it's coming like a freight train out of control going downhill, Doug. It can't be stopped, I don't believe. I hope the Department of Justice is doing the right thing. They seized a lot of telephones from a lot of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Those telephones giving the raw data they need to find out who's who and developing a networking involving the chain of command, all the connections they've got with each other, getting long lists of all their members. They're all interconnected. And hopefully the FBI has done that homework so they can begin making even more arrests, thousands of arrests, not just the few hundred they've done so far, but thousands of arrests of people that want to bring violence to the streets of America. That really needs to happen. I hope that the Attorney General is on top of it and the FBI like they should be. I have no reason to believe that President Trump has withheld, has told him not to act on this maybe after the election or maybe the day before the election. Thousands of arrests or hundreds of arrests a day or two before the election would be a really good thing of all the Antifa Black Lives Matter people, wouldn't it, Doug?
Oh, of those at that level? Yes.
Right. Right.
Now, I have a problem. I'll tell you right now. I got a problem with Christopher Wray. Okay. As the head of the FBI, I don't think I look at him and I just wonder what in the hell is he doing and why isn't he doing more? And of course, this does extend to Antifa at that level, but it also extends into the Biden stuff that's going on. And I'm not sure how down deep into the Biden morass that you've gone into, you know, with the laptop and what's on it and all this. But I'm telling you, brother, if I were President Trump, and maybe he's got reasons that I don't know. Obviously he does. On November 4th, as I'm sitting behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, you know, smoking my Cuban cigar. By the way, this is the first time I'm telling anybody this. I'm going to tell you this.
Okay.
A mutual friend of ours. I know you know him. I met him in Branson, Missouri. I'm not going to say his name. He gave me a Cuban cigar.
Okay.
And I've been saving it for the day after the election. I'll be smoking a Cuban cigar in there. I got a cigar that's non-Cuban down here, but folks deal with it. But where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. I'd be sitting behind the Resolute desk. I'd be smoking my cigar. And, yes, folks, I have zero disregard for the law of the land about, treaties and tariffs and such, right? Of course, that's what you're going to say. But I would fire Christopher Wray. I would demand Barr and Durham. I'd demand to see their work product, investigative work product. And probably I would go after the Antifa, Black Bloc, Black Lives Matter people. To the extent, or have them do it to the extent that they are never to be a problem again in this revolving door of crap that's going on in Portland and elsewhere.
Right. Well, the federal government in decades past has arrested men and women where two or three good old boys get together and decide they're going to overthrow the U.S. government, which is obviously a fantasy. But they get arrested and charged anyway, despite the unrealistic nature of their fantasy. In this case, with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, these men and women actually do have potentially have the ability to overthrow the government of the United States, far more so than three or four Billy Bobs in some remote area of the country who have a few beers and have a fantasy about overthrowing the government of the United States.
Right.
So hopefully the president will, if he hasn't already, take action to make sure that all these bona fide threats to our national security are in fact identified and arrested. That needs to happen. These people at Black Lives Matter, Antifa, they are a clear and present danger to the national security. They're giving aid and comfort to our enemies, the Chinese and the Russians. So they need to be arrested, and they need to be arrested as soon as possible. I don't know the timing. I hope those plans are underway and in place. The intelligence services have certainly identified everybody from mid-level management on up, I'm pretty sure, in both organizations, identified where the money is kept, identified who's funding them. The sources of funding need to be arrested as well, don't they?
That's correct. Notice that pregnant pause. That's correct.
Yes. Of course they do.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Right.
All of us in the Patriot community have been hearing about George Soros for a number of years, but it's his son, who's, I believe, 35 years old, Alexander Soros, is basically running the day-to-day operations of the Soros organization at this point in time.
Why? Okay. You and me could make a case against George Soros, right? I mean, I'm sure we could.
Of course.
Why isn't anyone making a case? I mean, look, Soros is not the only one. He's easy pickings.
He's a major player and he's well known, but he's not the only one.
Why can't we, you know what? Let's you and me get together. I'll tell you what. Let's try this. See how well this will work out. Well, you got to watch carefully now. We'll go up to where he's living in New York State, you and me, and we will get our investigative work product together and make a citizen's arrest on George Soros. I didn't think that would work out.
Well, I know from people who know that his private security force is all special ops guys. You don't want to go up against them.
Well, you're no slouch. You can handle that. Let me tell you what, we can gather some special forces guys. We know guys. We know people. We'll call a guy or two.
Right, right. Well, that's not going to happen, Doug. What needs to happen is a federal indictment and U.S. Marshals making this arrest. The private security force will stand down. There's not going to be any fisticuffs or shots fired. So the private security force would stand down. The U.S. Marshals make the arrest, and George and Alexander both would be transported to federal facility for processing. No, citizen's arrest is not going to happen with either one of these men. Knowing who they're connected to is one of the things I'm really interested in, because it's an international cabal.
Oh, yes.
Of men and women who want to destroy Western civilization. That's what that is, a cabal of men and women who want to commit crimes to destroy Western civilization.
Well, you know, I look at this, and it's, to me, this is all about these men wanting to become gods, small g gods, in part, and this is only in part, believing that they can avoid judgment. This is the spiritual part of it. And live forever. I really believe that. And that's where the spirit cooking and such comes in. If you, it's a real thing. I mean, look, that's a real thing, but this is what I think is going on. In my view, I want to show you this before I run out of time.
Okay. Please. Okay.
COVID madness. Okay. Now this is compliments of the Conservative Treehouse. It's a website I go to a lot. Sundance is great. Check this out. John, you got to check this out. California, Gavin Newsom. Here's the latest set of guidelines. This is not satire. These are the actual rules. Okay, here they are. This is for the holidays too. Gatherings that prohibited. Okay, gatherings that include more than three households are prohibited. Okay. Gatherings that include more than three households are prohibited. The host should collect names of all attendees and contact information. Yeah, like that'll friggin' happen. Okay. All gatherings must be held outside. Okay. Right. Try that in Pennsylvania, you puke. Attendees may go outside to, or go inside to use restrooms as long as the restrooms are frequently sanitized. Okay. He's going to check that a little. Okay. Seating must provide at least 6 feet of distance in all directions, front to back. What kind of bullshit is this? And I use that term without knowing exactly that people won't like that, but I'm serious. I mean, is this guy, who in the hell does this piece of crap think he is? Talk to me. Hey, oh, wait a second. Any food or beverage, hang on. This is another one. Any food or beverages at outdoor gatherings must be in single serve disposable containers. Yeah, well, screw you. Okay, people who are singing or chanting. First of all, I don't chant, I don't sing, but those who do have my blessing. They're strongly encouraging to do so quietly. Can you imagine? All right, let's get some, you know, Three Dog Night in there, okay? In their old days. What is wrong with you? The other thing I can say is, what is wrong with you? So now I'm fired up. You take over and tell me, what in the hell is going on here? Oh, my God.
Communists like control. That's a basic foundational premise of all socialists and all communists all the time. They like to be in total control. Frequently when we talk about the former Soviet Union and China, we talk about a command economy,
right?
Which is why they're failures, why women's feminine hygiene products were almost impossible to find in Russia during the days of the Soviet Union, which is why
Eric, there was the tech is hoarding them, by the way, for those ladies.
There was no privately owned automobiles in the entire country of China until I was in college, about 1972, I believe. The very first privately owned motor vehicle was bought by a Chinese man. They command control, command economies don't work because they got a few people making decisions for the entire economy. There's no market driven decisions. Even today, where is the dealership for Russian made automobiles? Where is that dealership? Well, it doesn't exist. Not in this country. Go to a place that sells shoes and boots. Where's the Russian made shoes and boots? They're not there. They easily, a country that size, the size of Russia, 13 time zones and a population roughly equivalent of ours, they could be making world class consumable goods, but they don't. They don't. They sell petroleum products. They sell metals. Not much else as far as anything that can be exported. They export weapons and weapon systems to various third world countries. They seem to be fairly good at making MiG jet fighters. But when it comes to things that people want and need, automobiles, boots, shoes, electronics, clothing. When's the last time you saw a Russian made jacket? In a clothing store, Doug, you don't. You know, they're not there.
That's true, yeah.
And that's what's coming to California. They want a command economy in California where you'll see goods for consumer consumption goods, automobiles, clothing, electronics, things like that won't be available. They'll have to be imported as opposed to being made locally.
You make some really good points there, by the way.
Well, that's where it's headed. Where they want it to be.
Yeah.
The free market ceases to exist in all socialist communist countries within a reasonably short period of time. It ceases because socialism can't exist in the same space as a free market economy because the free market economy quickly demonstrates the shortcomings of a socialist communist economy. Very quickly demonstrate, and they can't have that. They can't. I recall seeing a video when it came to that thing you just read there, of Christians in China singing silently because if they sang and made any singing sounds, they would all be arrested for being Christians. And I was one of the saddest things I've ever seen on video, was Christian men and women in China singing silently and happy to do so and celebrating the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's where they're headed to. Socialist communist in California. They're doing something that has always been the communist dream. That's imposing, very draconian, rules on Christians, on Christian churches to basically have them become non-entities, which is what they really want. They hate our Lord Jesus. They hate Christianity. They hate the Christian Bible. Anything they can do to compromise it or make it go away, they're going to do it. And they are doing it, Doug. Incrementally.
Yeah. They are.
Church services, I think, in California, outdoor services where people are in their motor vehicles, windows up, air conditioning going, and they still call the police on them. It's just as secure as being inside your own home, being in an automobile in a public place with the windows up and the air conditioner going. That's absurd, but they're doing it, and they revel in it. They relish it. And I think it's a great thing. I think they're helping achieve their goal of having a godless communist regime in California. That's where it's headed. And of course, once the communists really take over, the Russians and Chinese, the first persons they arrest and execute are the people like Pelosi and Feinstein and Newsom, the governor of California. They're the first ones to get arrested and lined up against the wall and shot to death.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It is. And it's not a flippant statement. It's based on history and what happens. The communists know they can't trust a traitor. So Governor Newsom, Nancy Pelosi, Senator Feinstein, they're all known to the communists to be traitors,
yep.
to be used and made use of while they're attempting to take over. But once they do take over, they line these people up against the wall and shoot them to death.
You know, just to tell you how quickly things are, to demonstrate how quickly things have changed. Back in 2000, I don't know if you remember former, I think it was Republican Senator Alan Simpson, and Democratic Colorado Governor Richard Lamb. Together they wrote this. We both saw California in the 1950s when it had 10 million people. Now I watched I love Dragnet, even the reruns.
Right. Hard and Friday.
You're right. 5 o'clock, by the way, folks, it starts at 5 o'clock in the morning on METV in the Eastern time and goes to, or 5:30 and goes to 6:30, I think. Anyway, or 5 to 6, whatever it is. But anyway, so this is what he said. We saw California in the 1950s when it had 10 million people. It was paradise. But it soon grew to 20 million. It's now up to 34 million. This is back in 2000. And is expected to have 50 million people by the year 2010. Again, this is 2000.
Right.
We have yet to meet a Californian who wants 50 million neighbors. Okay. Now, for all we know, every Californian has that many right now, but even at 35 million, the state was already a hard place to live. Again, Simpson and Lamb back then saying that the entire Western United States is under tremendous growth pressure, partly from Californians leaving California. The most common reasons for departing are too many people, too much congestion, too much traffic, lowering of quality of life. More people have left California since 1990 than actually live in Wyoming. Is that a harbinger for the nation? And this is from a book, by the way, by Michael Anton that's called Be Afraid, Very Afraid. Okay, but the reason I brought all that up is because I didn't realize this. California is the densest state in the nation in terms of density. Well, I'm sorry. No. Let me rephrase that. In terms of density, it ranks 11th in the nation, but it's denser than Illinois and, even land poor Hawaii. So, and there are two really in California, two different states, the very narrow 50 mile wide coastal areas. And, in some areas, much narrower than that. And then the rest of the place, rest of the state. So it's really an interesting study in what you are talking about in communism and such. I think that it's kind of a microcosm of the larger problem. I just wanted to get that out there because I thought it was interesting. Okay, I'm done now.
Okay, well, there's an interesting segue on that. There's California legislators who are actively considering an exit tax. If you want to leave the state, they will seize part of your assets as a payoff for your being able to leave the state. Hopefully people will be able to avoid that and successfully leave the state with all their assets intact. But that's a classic communist tactic also. In this case, they can't, since they haven't taken over the whole country, they can't stop you from leaving. But apparently there may be a way for them to seize assets if you do want to leave. Of course, that's the ideal thing would be to, well, remove all the assets before you leave. So that's where there's nothing left to take. And hopefully there wouldn't be any authority from the to seize assets once you've successfully left the state. That would be the smart thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Is California, in your view, is California, do you think, a harbinger of America? Should our country?
Well, it's a harbinger of, Oregon and Washington State, at least.
Yeah.
At a minimum. It's a harbinger for the state of Illinois, the state of New York, the state of New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, where the communists have a strong foothold. So it's a harbinger, possibly, unfortunately, Texas. There's been a large influx of both illegal immigrants and Californians to the state of Texas. It may very well change the demographics of Texas. Arizona, same way. So out of the 50 states, it's a harbinger for maybe 8 or 10 states, something of that nature, at least initially. If they can win the Oval Office, win the U.S. Senate, all bets are off. It's inevitable that they will at some point in the future, because we've always had these transitions of power back and forth between the White House, between the Democrats and the Republicans. It won't happen this time if it's a free and fair election. But next time, who knows? I don't know who a viable Republican candidate would be offhand. Hopefully there'll be a viable candidate who will generate the enthusiasm that President Trump has. That needs to happen. And there's already people speculating about it. And hoping that we get a good, viable candidate. Now, I've known people at fairly high levels in these circles, and they're all wanting the same thing, Doug. They all want the same thing.
You know, it makes me think when I see the pictures of voter cards. I think it's for Portland. Yeah, it is for Portland. It's you got two choices for mayor. You've got Ted Wheeler. And we know what that idiot is. And then you got that Sarah Iaroni or whatever Iarone is. And she is a Black Lives. She's white, but she's a BLM Antifa, supporter, anarchist. And she used to wear, I don't know if she still does, but she used to wear all communist clothing. You know, you remember that back in the 70s.
Sure.
The communist clothing. So that's your choice for mayor of Portland. Where'd everyone go? Where'd the same people go? You know, they're not running for office apparently, but anyway, I'm worried, man. I'm worried. Can I tell you more?
Well, your concern is valid. Your concern is justified, Doug. Now, the culture, my daughter lives in the metro Seattle area, about more than an hour drive from downtown. So she's safe from all that Antifa silliness, Black Lives Matter silliness. But she's watched her state change also from California transplants coming, and she's had it with California transplants, mm-hmm. doesn't want any more. So the culture has changed so dramatically in those three states that finding a viable, electable conservative is very difficult. Even if you find one, demographics has changed where it's quite difficult to get a bona fide conservative elected statewide in California. It's just an unfortunate reality, Doug.
It is.
I don't see it changing anytime soon. I really don't.
And that is something I think that we should be very concerned about because, you know, as you and I age, although we are timeless, we still age. Did I say we're timeless? I think that's pretty cool. But anyway.
Well, our thoughts are timeless. Our thoughts are timeless, yes.
Well, that's right. As we age, some more gracefully than others, you know. We've got to make change. I mean, we really have to do whatever we can to make changes. And I think that, again, I'm very concerned because I see this country going in a direction that you and I have to. When I was talking to a good friend, Randy Taylor, this morning, he said, I can't let this happen to my country. And I feel the same way. I can't let this happen to my country. And I'm sure you feel the same way as well. So, I mean, we play by the rules to the extent possible, but man, I'll tell you, it's getting more and more difficult to play by those rules. And I'm about ready to knock the board over. That's just me. What do you think?
I have no intention of doing anything outside the rules.
Right.
There's no rule against defending, innocent life, defending your own property. Most of the action is going to be at the local level. People want to look at some national organization at the county level, at the township level.
Yep.
That's where people need to be taking action. Don't wait for somebody to take, lead you at the national level. You don't need to wait for that. Find people of like mind in your township, your town, your county, and work with those people to elect a constitution believing sheriff, to elect all officials who believe and support the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. State reps, state senators, of course, the U.S. reps and the U.S. senators as well. That's what you can do at the county level.
I love it that you've always done that. You've always said that. And I don't mean to over-talk you, but you've been very consistent. You know, what can we do? We start locally because we can take that county seat. We can take that city council's position. If some moron, you know, in a tight weave, and that's not a reference to a race, in a earring through his head, can take a city council position, you can. So we can change it. You've always been that way. You always said,
"Well, Doug, I've been involved in political process for decades, and most of the 3,300 counties, there's about 50 men and women who make the decisions for that county. Who gets elected? How is the money spent? What are the priorities? It's a small group of men and women in most of the 3,300 counties, and you can get to know these people. You can possibly become one of them, get elected. I'm the Republican committeeman for my township. Many of these Republican committee posts go unfilled because people don't even have the motivation to run, unopposed, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Taking an interest at the local level, doing things at the local level, making sure Democrats don't get elected at any position, that gives them more power. If a Democrat gets elected city marshal or on the city council, the Democrats regard that as an enhancement of their power. So even these local elections make a difference in terms of how power is made use of at the state level and at the national level. We can't allow that to happen. We need to have conservative Christians elected to offices at every level. City level, county level, school board.
Yep.
These school boards are very important.
Very.
Major decisions being made in these schools. And these school districts, they need conservative Christians to make decisions that are based on the traditions of our culture, based on the Constitution, based on just doing the right thing and not allowing young men to compete in young ladies' sports.
Right.
It's just one example. The school board can eliminate that. And that's what needs to happen. So we've got lots of work to do, Doug. The Boston senator or congressman? All politics is local.
Yep.
That hasn't changed. That has not changed.
Amen.
All
that,
politics
brother.
Is local. And just keep that in mind.
And I think, I think I'm going to run for something. I don't know. I'm not going to run from anything, but I think I'm going to run for something. Just because I've had it. And folks, I would urge you to do the same thing. Folks, you've been listening to John Moore, the incredible, as I like to say, the man, the myth, the legend. Here he is, John Moore. Go to thelibertyman.com. We are at the end of the program. I can't believe how quickly it's gone. It's just a conversation we've been having.
Very fast. Very fast, 2 hours.
Yeah, it's been fun, actually. You know, it's been fun. But it's been okay, just the same. Oh, I'm
lose the air quotes, Doug. See you next Monday.
If you ever see me do that, I want you to slap me, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Side the head. Okay.
Thank you.
See you next Monday.
All right, folks, that'll do it for me. That's it. And aren't you glad, right? Have a great night until tomorrow. Stay safe. May God bless each and every one. HagmanStore.com. Don't forget HagmanStore.com. Good night.